This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to week 16 of the official Raiders podcast. I'm your host, JT. The Silver and Black take on the Philadelphia Eagles Monday, Christmas, December 25th, 2017. It's a late start, 5:30 Pacific time, 8:30 Eastern time. You can check out that game on Monday Night Football. As we get going, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to everyone. A long year, lot to get to. This podcast is absolutely loaded with some of the best guests that we've had so far this year. Raiders come into the game 6-8, taking on the best team in the NFC, the Philadelphia Eagles, with a 12-2 record. This was in a very, very big emotional week for Raider fans and the Raider organization after what happened this past Sunday night in Oakland, Sunday Night Football, where the Raiders came up short, losing to the Cowboys by a score of 20-17. There's been a lot of talk about that game and what happened and how that game concluded and wrapped up. The referee in that game, Gene Steratore, made a decision late in that game on a critical fourth down, where the Dallas Cowboys ended up picking up a first down on their way to taking a lead with a field goal, and it cost the Raiders that game. In all of my years of being with the Raiders, covering the NFL, and long before that as a fan, I don't remember being as upset with a call since the Tuck rule. Now, I'm not going to put this up there with the Rob Lytle fumble, the immaculate reception, and the Tuck rule, but this was a really big moment when it came to a regular season home game in the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum, and another call that went against the Raiders, which was a bad call. And on top of it, for Steratore, who's a pretty good referee on all accounts, to sit there with a smug look and a smile in a game where the Raiders had 14 penalties for 105 yards compared to Dallas's 7 penalties for 100, I really believe that mistake cost the Raiders the game. You know, a lot of the players aren't going to admit it, and the coaches aren't going to go down that road, but the Raiders were outplaying Dallas in the second half of that game. They won the turnover battle. We'll get to the Carr fumble and what happened at the goal line, but that was a call that we'll remember the rest of our lives. And for a referee on a call to take out a piece of paper and fold it, and to do that, I looked at it differently. I thought that that was an embarrassment to the Raider fans in attendance and the Raider organization for him to add insult to such a bad call. Because a proud referee and a good referee is supposed to make a decision. If he makes that decision and comes up with it and doesn't bend the paper, we can live with it and go another day. But when he took out the piece of paper and you could see air in between the ball and the rubber of the first down marker, and then he came up with the smirk and said, "First down, Dallas," that really chapped a lot of Raider fans and still has me upset on the radio and all the Raider fans that I talk to on social media there. So let's go back to Jack Del Rio after the game and what he said about what went down on that critical fourth down.
"I don't want to get fined, okay? I'm not happy with the way things were done on a lot of different situations throughout the night. They did the best they could. I had a different viewpoint. I saw air. It was pretty obvious."
That was a poorly officiated game. There was a pass interference with Cook in the end zone that never happened, that took points off the board. Look, there were some holding calls and some false starts, and clearly the Raiders made mistakes, but there were about three or four of those penalties and flags that shouldn't have been thrown, but that big one on fourth down. And on top of that, one more point. NBC had the Sunday night camera above the ball, so we were able to see that angle too as they were trying to move the pile, and they actually came up short. I know Dallas fans say the opposite there, but that was a critical call in the game, and I think the Raiders would have won the game. For Jack Del Rio, he's been in this business a long time as a player and a coach. To see something like that at home, it just didn't sit well.
"Never seen air like that, and it somehow turned into a first down. The air between the ball and the stick, that's sure short, okay? Goes the other way, period."
Yeah, you could tell by the tone in Coach Del Rio how upset he was on that. And again, just a lot of bad things have happened this year. Calls, injuries, mistakes along the way. But that one hurt because it would have eliminated the Dallas Cowboys. Let's forget for a second where the Raiders are and what they're trying to do and what could have happened in that game to keep them mathematically alive and have a shot. It kept the Dallas Cowboys in the playoff hunt, getting Ezekiel Elliott back. and all of a sudden the Cowboys have something to play for. I'm really still upset, as you can tell, moving forward. Let's get to the Carr play at the goal line and how that played out as Derek Carr on a critical third down tried to get to the end zone.
Third and three from the eight. Derek in the shotgun, looks left, pumps, gets pressured. Derek gets out to his right. Derek gonna run. He's got the first down. He dives for the pylon. Where are they gonna spot him? He's got the first down. It's at least a first down. Where'd they spot him out? The 2 yard line.
Through the end zone and out of the end zone. The ruling on the field is a touchback. First down.
He fumbled the ball. Derek Carr fumbled the ball. He lost the ball diving for the pylon. The Raiders are gonna lose the game.
Yes, the Raiders ended up losing the game. So the debate all week after that was, why didn't Derek just get out of bounds? They would have easily been able to tie the game or win it with a timeout, maybe get Marshawn going. I'm not going to be critical of Derek on that play because he tried to make a football play. He left it all out on the field. This guy's been playing hurt this year. He was in that game late, and he tried to win the game, and a lot of quarterbacks would have done the same thing, and he owned it afterwards. It's just another bad luck play, a fluke play. Out of all the things that could have happened on that third down for the fumble into the end zone, it was shocking for the Raider fans in attendance, but that guy's a leader. He continues to own every issue surrounding this football team. And again, I thought he tried to make a play, and he should be commended at least for being that athletic considering what he's been through this year. So we put that game behind us. We get ready for Philadelphia, and they're a really good football team. They have Nick Foles now at quarterback. Remember, he threw 7 touchdowns against the Raiders in Oakland when they played last time. This guy can play in this league. Carson Wentz, I thought, was outperforming Tom Brady for the MVP award when he got hurt out in Los Angeles, and now he is gone for the year. So for the Raiders, they're going up against Nick Foles, but I think Nick Foles can play at a high level, and the Raiders need to show up and play for pride. Coming into this game, the Raiders' offense is ranked 19th overall, as the Eagles are ranked 3rd. The Eagles have the number 2 rushing offense at 140 yards a game. They have the 6th overall defense, and get this, they have the number 1 rushing defense in all of football, only giving up 71.5 yards a game. They're 4th in turnover ratio at +9. The Raiders are tied for 27th at -9. And for the Raiders coming in here, their rush defense is ranked 15th. And we'll see what they're able to do as they try to put this team together and get them out there for a Christmas Day, Christmas night game. And hopefully this team, who has a lot of pride, has a lot to play for, even though there's no realistic path to the playoffs. But these are the last 2 games of the season. And these guys need to play together. They all understand that changes are going to be made this offseason. And if they want to continue to be Raiders, they better leave it on the field. And playing on Monday night against a very solid team should get this team ready to go. The Raiders are going to have to try to score on defense and special teams. It's going to take a huge effort on all 3 sides. But the Raiders, because it only takes a couple of big plays or a turnover by the defense to gain momentum, this should really be a good game. And the Raiders can't afford to get down early. They got to start fast and play. Make Philadelphia play catch up, because this is a Philadelphia team playing for a home field throughout the entire NFC. Getting that bye week is one thing. They want 2 home games and try to get to the Super Bowl. So the motivation is going to be there in a big way for Philadelphia coming into this game, and they deserve it. They've played at a high level this year. They're arguably the best team in all of football right there with the New England Patriots. Let's see what they do. Let's get to our first guest on the official Raiders podcast, someone that I've been holding back to the end of the year because he's that important, and I wanted to make sure we could fit him in. Cliff Branch is one of the great Raider wide receivers of all time, one of the great wide receivers in the history of this game, a 3-time Super Bowl champion, a 4-time Pro Bowler, a 4-time All-Pro, and twice he led the NFL with receiving touchdowns in 1974 and 1976. And we welcome Cliff to the official Raiders podcast. Cliff, you're around this team. You travel with this team. You know them as good as anybody. And obviously a lot of ups and downs this year, especially we just mentioned what happened in that Dallas Cowboy game. Let's begin. Give us your big picture on this season from your perspective and your analysis on why the Raiders came up short this year.
Well, let's look at the offensive point of view. $100 million offensive line was not like they were the year before. You know, they made a lot of big plays. Carr had a lot of protection last year. He was able to complete a lot of touchdown passes. And he led the team to a lot of comebacks in the fourth quarter last year, maybe six games. So I don't think the offensive line was healthy as a unit this year. You know, the right tackle was, players were replaced constantly during the year. Donald Penn, you know, got hurt late in the season, so he wasn't healthy. Gabe Jackson missed a few games. So we wasn't healthy as we were the year before from the offensive line point of view. For the receiving core, a lot of drop balls, man. You look at their stats this year. Amari Cooper and Crabtree had probably 90 receptions last year. A piece went over 1,000 yards with production of 9 touchdowns for Crabtree, maybe 4 or 5 for Cooper. This year, they haven't even broke the 50 mark for his reception. Well under 500 yards in total reception yard between the two. So that area is down. Just a lot of drop balls, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have playmakers, during my era, we didn't have the opportunity to get the chance to get the opportunity to catch a lot of passes like they do today. So the chances were minimum, so we made the best of it. Very few drop balls during my era with the players I played with. We dropped too many balls. So when you drop as many balls as we drop, that's the production is going to be down there.
But let me jump in right there, Cliff, because that's one of the main reasons I wanted to talk to you in regards to the drop balls. Because when Amari Cooper came in and you were there at the first training camp, I remember you pulling me aside and saying, JT, look at this work ethic. Look at this kid and how locked in he is. And still, his statistics as a young Raider receiver are right up there with the greats of all time, including yourself. What can you do and what can the coaches do and what can Amari Cooper do in the future to cut down on those drops? Is it just extra work, more practice? Is it better coaching? What is it that will help him improve at that position?
Well, JT, you hit it right on the nail. All those things that you mentioned got to be incorporated. You got to have more work ethic. You got to stay after practice, you know, and work on catching more balls. You know, when Tiger Woods is at his best, he's at the driving range, hitting balls left and right. When Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan is in the gym, they putting up 100 shots after practice. So you got to do the extra, man, to be the top of your game. You look at Antonio Brown, man. He's got over 100 receptions and only 2 drops. So he puts in all the work, and it pays off on Sunday. I don't know how much extra work our receivers are doing. They're not doing something right because the production is down.
Cliff Branch is our guest. Cliff, you know, big picture, coming off 12 wins, I really want to spend a moment talking about Derek Carr because you played with brilliant, legendary quarterbacks, and I think Derek Carr deserves a lot of credit. His production's down this year, but as I keep telling everyone, he was injured last year. He came back sooner than later. He had 2 injuries. He had the broken leg. He had the pinky injury. And then this year he had the problem with his back, and he came back, in my opinion, sooner, much sooner than everybody expected. And he just doesn't seem to be in that rhythm. He's checking down more. He just doesn't seem comfortable airing it out. And with the remaining games here, how important is it that Carr builds confidence at the end of the year and has a great offseason? Because, you know, Mark Davis paid him a lot of money long-term to be the franchise quarterback. They need him back on track, playing like a Pro Bowler for years to come.
Well, JT, he's got youth on his side. You know, the kid's only 25 years old. He's gonna evaluate his season and gonna say, hey, I wasn't as near as I was last year, even though I missed the last part of the game. I mean, we were talking last year as an MVP candidate for being MVP of the league until he broke his leg and stuff like that. So he's got to look at it and say, I wasn't even close to the production I was the year before. So he's been in the league long enough to say, I got to be able to come out of the huddle and take command, come to the line of scrimmage. If they're sending plays from the sideline, I got to come out and read that defense and say, hey, there's a better play that I can call than what they sent in by reading the defense. And he's at that maturity as a player that he's got to be able to read defenses. And you gotta be say, check with me on the ball. Because that's what Kenny Stabler and Jim Plunkett did. Although they send players in, they call plays, but they come to the line of scrimmage, man, and they say, look at the defense, and they can read the defense and say, this play is not going to work. There's a better play. And Derek is that maturity in his career that he's got to be able to read defense and play chess with the defense from his point of view.
We're wrapping it up with Cliff Branch. Cliff, you recently lost your home in the Santa Rosa fire, and I know how you've been able to get through this. With the help of the Raider organization, family and friends, especially one of your dearest friends in Mark Davis, walk us through how that event changed your life and how the Raider family stepped up with you.
Well, when I got that call that I had to evacuate, was a life-saving moment for me because I had just gotten home and about 10 o'clock I started watching the first half of the game and I fell asleep about 11. And then at 1:45 in the morning, I got this call that I got to evacuate immediately, and the power went out. So I grabbed my Super Bowl ring and rushed to one of my cars outside of the garage and left. And from that moment, Mike Madden reached out to me and said, "Did Madden family have in the hotel business? They said if we need a place to stay, you can come stay at my hotel." And I did that for a month. I told Mike, yes, I would take that offer up, and I would go stay at his hotel. I stayed there for a month in the city of Dublin, and then the Raiders reached out to me because that's the Raider way. We're all about family. They reached out and said, if you need anything, you know, we are there for you. The whole organization, from the secondary to Jack Del Rio to Mark DeBane to Mark Davis, the Raiders are all about family. They had open arms. So I know if I need anything, that wouldn't be no problem for them to reach out and help me in every aspect of my life. So from there, everything's just been wonderful. JT, I'm rebuilding. I'm in the city of Dublin now. I got an apartment that I am leasing for 12 months. And from there, I'll be probably for 12 months from now, I'll probably be in Vegas breaking ground and will have a new residence in Las Vegas within the next year and a half.
I'll tell you, Cliff, all the times I've known you and we've become friends and you've taken me under your wing, I've never once seen you down. I've never seen you in a bad mood once. And you lost all your possessions other than your Super Bowl rings. You got out of there with just the clothes on your back. And again, you see the positives in all that because you saw a lot of people in and around you, your neighbors, and a lot of people that are worse off. And I know you're going to help those people along the way because they need your help.
Yes, yes. I mean, the Raiders, we went on did a PA announcement at the Coliseum, you know, public service announcement, because the Raiders donated $1 million in relief funds to the county of Sonoma and Napa. So, they have reached out monetarily to help people that lost a lot of things. And that's the Raider way because they have always, there's never not enough that you can give back. And the Raiders reached out and also contribute to funds and to help the county and stuff like that.
We'll see you along the way. Obviously, this is a great journey for the Silver and Black. There's a lot of change coming, and you're a big part of it. Always appreciate your time. Have a great holiday. Hopefully the Raiders get a win at Philadelphia. We have something to celebrate, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, JT, for having me on the show.
So, again, thanks to Cliff Branch, one of the great Raider wide receivers of all time. And that story about his house is really unique, and we wish Cliff nothing but the best. Next is one of the great play-by-play voices in all of sports, from the NBA to the great work that he does with the NFL on CBS. We'll talk to Kevin Harlan on the Official Raiders podcast. And, Kevin, first off, good to have you on again. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. How you been, my friend?
Great, JT. It's always good to hear your voice. Thank you very much, and a very happy holiday to you and your listeners.
A couple things I want to begin with. You had the Raider game against Kansas City with Rich Gannon, and that was really the last stand for the Silver and Black as they controlled their destiny. There was a lot of talk within the Raiders. If they start there, win that, get into first in their division, and then keep it going, they could get into the playoffs. And really, they didn't show up early in that game, and that was the beginning of the end.
Very surprising. I after talking to them the day before, as we did, JT, they appeared to be very focused and ready for it, knew the ramifications, knew how important the game was, knew that if they won that, then they could really kind of, you know, control so much about what the next couple of weeks then would bring. And I don't know that I have seen, with this version of the Raiders, them come out and play as flatly as they did to start things. They picked up a little steam, as we know, at the end. But by that time, Kansas City had things in control. They had the prevent D in, and it was going to be very, very tough for Carr to maneuver and the team to do what they wanted to do. Losing Cooper, obviously, early in the game was a problem. And but they've got some depth there, and guys have developed, and it wasn't debilitating. I don't know for the life of me what has been wrong with not only that game, but really the body of the season. Just this is the team that no one thought they would see. And sure enough, they could not find any kind of consistency in their season whatsoever. I'm a Raiders fan. I think when the Raiders are good, the league is better. They're just a national team. They've got an incredible following. They have had excellence in their history. Certainly they represent a lot of success, and now they're kind of with this resurgence in Carr and everything else, JT, you say they've got all the parts. They've got receivers. They've got playmakers on defense, including the reigning defensive player of the year. As it's turned out, their secondary failed them. A couple other areas didn't produce like they thought they should, and you're left with the kind of season you've got, which is really hard to see considering all the promise coming into the year.
What do you think of Marshawn Lynch? Because it was more than an experiment, the fit in Oakland for him coming home again. Kevin, I see him running violently all year long, but the Raiders get caught with down and distance. A lot of times they just give it to him on 2nd and 10, where it seems like the defense knows he's getting the ball. But the last couple of weeks, he continues to run really hard. But the Raiders, with this offensive line scheme, a zone blocking at time and space when they have road graders, I think it's a good idea, and I think he's a really good player. I just don't know what guys like you think of the overall fit with Carr being an explosive quarterback in the backfield.
Well, it's a very good question, a very good thought. I am personally a huge Marshawn fan. I think when you say he runs violently, that is a perfect way to describe that. He just has a different way about the way he handles the ball. It does take, you know, listen, Russell Wilson up in Seattle in that offense, they were able to figure out a way to incorporate him and make him very effective. And I'm sure that Todd Downing thought he could do the same thing. We know the start was a little bit slower than people thought, and that is probably, after sitting out a year, I mean, that's understandable. But, boy, you're right. Second, since the suspension, he has been like a completely different guy. And I see an engaged, passionate player that wants to keep going, gives every ounce on every carry he gets. The question is, how do you use him? He's a very unique running back. And I don't know that necessarily they've had a comfort level on when he is best used. I know a lot of times there's been some thought we've heard from various Raiders that maybe even early in the season, middle of the season, he was being asked to be taken out of the game because he was winded and tired. And I get that. He runs harder than anybody else in the league, and he's been sitting out a year. He's still trying to reclaim his physical self. So I guess parts of that are understandable. But you've got the two guys in back of him who are kind of different kind of running backs, and they give a different kind of look. That part has been surprising. The highest paid offensive line in pro football with all the different components they possess, including at times, you know, some very high rankings in the analytics with each individual guy, and that has not worked out better. You know, you mentioned Carr, I don't know where he's at. First of all, I like him. Mm-hmm. I like him as a guy. I think he's a good leader. I think he's an outstanding teammate. His play this year, and I don't watch every game. I don't watch every practice like you all do. He does not seem to be the same physical quarterback. Passes overthrown, passes wide. I don't recall that in Carr's resume a season ago. So either the back or other injuries are playing more of a role than we even know. And he has been, you know, just incredibly courageous to get out there and play every week when he's been far, far from 100% physically. That could be playing into it as well. I don't know. Like, they're one of the more confounding teams of this entire season in the overall NFL.
Kevin Harlan's our guest, play-by-play announcer for the NFL on CBS. Yeah, I've spoken to several guests over the last couple of weeks, and they say the same thing on Carr, is that we're not going to know how banged up he was till after the year. And, Kevin, I know you saw it and what happened on Sunday Night Football with Gene Steratore and what happened with the card folded over on that fourth down that turned out to be a first down for the Dallas Cowboys. And I really think that had an effect on the game because the Raiders get a stop on the 39-yard line. They control the ball, time of possession. They can win that game. And that eliminates the Dallas Cowboys mathematically from the playoffs and keeps the Raiders alive as they go into Philadelphia on Monday Night Football. Have you ever seen anything like that with all the games that you call play-by-play in multiple sports where a referee stops for a measurement and then looks for that? And then we saw the camera angle. There was air in between the ball and the first down marker, but it still went against the silver and black.
Yeah, I know. That was no, I've not seen that, JT. Have incredible respect for Steratore. I know that Gene is one of the best referees in the NFL. And in college basketball, by the way. He's an NCAA college basketball referee, so I see him a lot in the winter in the Big Ten and in the SEC. I respect him for what he was doing. First of all, when you're taking the measurement of the ball and those chains are going up and down that sideline over the course of a game, you're going to be off by a couple inches. It's just human nature. It's not electronic. It's not done by lasers. It's done by humans. So, listen, I mean, we're talking about a fraction of an inch and a millimeter maybe. And I don't know. I guess he wanted to make sure that he saw what he saw and his eyes were not deceiving him. But, I mean, was that the true measurement of – was that really where the ball was? Is that exactly where those chains were? You know, they tag it in between the sticks with a little, which people don't see, but you tag the yard, one of the yard lines in between the sticks, and that's where the real measurement is initially held, and then they pull them taut on either side, and that's how you get the measurement. But it can't. It's not science. It's the best that a human can do under those circumstances, with teams racing up and down, working on busy sidelines. So, I mean, it was what it was. And maybe if it's another stadium, another crew, whatever, they don't get it. This one they did. Hard to say, but it is, as they say, a game of inches, and in this case, a game of a fraction of an inch.
Kevin, as we wrap this up, you know, the Raiders went to the playoffs last year, but Carr broke his leg. They were one and out, and you know what's been happening around this organization. The Raider fans have really shown that they could show up in Oakland. There's relocation. There's Vegas in a couple of years. You know Mark Davis. Get a chance to talk to him and Reggie McKenzie, individuals around the organization. Todd Downing's been on the hot seat in regards to at least the fans and the media coming after him. They got rid of Ken Norton Jr., and obviously John Pagano was elevated on the defensive side. Let's wrap it up big picture for Jack Del Rio. You know these players. You know the Pro Bowlers that they had. They take a step back this year, but the Raiders are really planning on winning or getting to a Super Bowl in Oakland before they relocate to Las Vegas. What do they have to do, big picture, in your mind, in the offseason to get back on track again?
Well, the secondary's got to be fixed. I think teams felt pretty confident going into games against the Raiders they could throw on them. When you've got guys like Irvin, you've got guys like Mac, the middle seems to be pretty secure. And even though we're seeing, you know, Mac kind of is playing, he plays standing up. He goes down in the three-point stance, more defensive end probably than linebacker. But he can. We know that these are versatile players that can put their hand in the dirt and play back. And so I guess the front seven has less concern than the back end. And the secondary needs help. Losing Amerson didn't help. We know that. So I guess I would start with the shutdown corner feel. Hope some of these young kids you've gotten have developed. Offensively, you know, Cooper Amari was such a mystery. And why this season was so different than his last two, the drops early on, the injuries here late in the season. Crabtree is Crabtree, pretty consistent, pretty much. And I'd love to see Lynch come back. And I think you need a healthy quarterback. I really think that we're talking about just a couple of areas of need, but at the same time, your quarterback has got to be healthy, and I just don't know that he is. And like you said, JT, at the end of the season, we may get the real story on the back or whatever else is ailing, and we know he broke the small bone in his back, and that for a guy, for quarterbacks cannot be good on torque and throwing and maneuvering and trying to work sideways and laterally and all those things. So my hope is still high for the Raiders. They've got the right parts. I think they've got the right guy drafting. I think Mark is staying out of the way. The offensive coordinator thing, I got to tell you, that was a mystery when it happened. It will continue to be. You got a first-time coordinator with a Ferrari ready to go. And, you know, he was trying to feel his way. But Carr would go up to him and say, this is not you. This is not on you. This is all on us. I mean, every Raider offensive guy told us the same thing. They believe in him. So you take him at their word, and I just guess you hope you get a couple of more playmakers on defense, back end, another guy on offense, maybe on your line, and you go in with the same kind of hope, and I think they will going into next year. My hopes are very high for the organization. They've turned the corner. Now you're polishing off what has been, I think, a pretty good project, and hopefully they see the fruition of that with a healthy quarterback, unlike last year. And we think kind of unlike this year.
Kevin, you know, I'm always watching. I'm always listening. Really appreciate your time. Happy holidays. Have a great new year. And I'll see you out in Minneapolis at the Super Bowl.
Always enjoy it, JT. Thank you very much. And a very happy holiday to you and a great new year.
There he is, Kevin Harlan. What a great play-by-play voice. He handles it all. We appreciate him joining us on the official Raiders podcast. Wow. He calls so many big games. He's traveling. That guy's on an airplane literally 2 to 3 days a week, and he calls a lot of Raider games. You'll see him and hear him in years to come calling big games for the Silver and Black. Now we're joined by one of the great linebackers of his era. Seth Joyner played for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's now at Fox Sports 1 as an NFL analyst. He's a three-time Pro Bowler, a three-time All-Pro, and we're thrilled that he can make some time to join us this week. Seth, thanks for coming on, and let's begin by getting your big picture of the Eagles recently, especially without Carson Wentz injured at quarterback.
Well, I mean, obviously it's a big loss when you lose a guy that's, you know, probably the leading candidate for MVP. 33 touchdowns, you know, with basically 2.5 games to go. But, you know, this team has endured a lot of injuries all year long. They kept chugging along. And, you know, I had a feeling that Nick Foles was going to come in and play a pretty decent game and be fine. After what I've seen, you know, with the defense the last three games, I mean, I think, in my opinion, that's the most alarming part of this team right now. I look for the offense to continue to do what they're doing, but you know, as you know as well as I do, that you know, this time of the year, it's all about, you know, peaking at the right time and being able to hit your stride at the right time, because the best team isn't always the team that wins, the team that gets hot at the right time.
Seth, what's interesting, all teams, as you know, as a great player in this league, that guys go through injuries, and teams at the end of the year have always lost several good players. This happened earlier in the year with the Eagles. The Eagles lost a great offensive lineman, linebacker. Injuries started piling up early for this team, but they didn't feel sorry for themselves, and they just kept winning, and now they have one of the best offensive lines in football, along with one of the best front sevens. How was the coaching staff, the training staff, able to get the most, not only out of the starters, but the reserves who are coming in and stepping right in?
Well, I mean, listen, don't don't think that they've gotten this far without there being some hiccups along the way. I mean, I still think, you know, on the offensive line that, you know, that left side of the offensive line with, you know, with Vitae and you know, Chance Womack, you know, having to step in for Stephen Wisniewski, you know, that's still a weak link, you know, for this football team if we don't run the ball with efficiency. You know, the defensive side of the ball, we've been lights out, you know, at certain times. And at other times, you know, we, you know, our big time, you know, defensive tackles, you know, have kind of disappeared. So there's been challenges, you know, along the way. But, you know, I think you've got to give Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas and Doug Peterson a lot of credit for being able to create enough depth that when you lose a Pro Bowl left tackle, that when you lose your starting middle linebacker and defensive signal caller, when you lose, you know, your third down back and punt returning, a guy that every time he has the ball in his hands, you kind of hold your breath because you know he has the possibility to take it, you know, to the house. And when you lose your best special teams player, and then you turn around and you lose an MVP, you know, quarterback, you know, that you got to give those guys some credit that they created enough depth and enough good players and have been able to develop enough players around the starters that when you lose a player of those five players' magnitude, that you still have the ability to continue on with the next man up mentality and continue to win and succeed.
Seth Joyner is our guest. I think the addition of Jay Ajayi and the way he's able to play explosive and make big plays and just have that burst, and he just seems to be so highly motivated with this fit. And then the play, I look at the receiving core here with Jeffrey and Aguilar and what they're able to do here. These guys get open. They go into traffic and make plays. Seth, is the key to this team and their ability maybe to make this Super Bowl run the physicality and how tough they are?
Well, I think the key, in my opinion, you know, let's start with Ajayi. I think he was a great addition. To be honest with you, I'm not so sure that he makes the team a whole hell of a lot better than what it already was. I think that they needed, you know, some depth at that position after they lost Darren Sproles. I don't think, you know, Smallwood really panned out to be what they thought he would be, and that kind of facilitated that move to go and get Jay Ajayi. You know, the way that they run, the way they rotate their running backs, you're never going to see a running back get more than 16 carries in a game, 16 touches. You know, and they keep all three of those guys, Blount, Ajayi, and Corey Clement, motivated because they never know who's going to be the workhorse from week to week. As far as what makes this defense so dynamic, is the fact that, you know, you don't know who's going to be that guy from week to week. You know, if I've got an explosive wide receiver and a great running back, well, as a defense coordinator, I can game plan, I can scheme to take those two guys away. But when you just don't know who's going to get the ball, listen, Aguilar's got 9 touchdowns or 8 touchdowns. Alshon Jeffrey's got 9 touchdowns. Zach Ertz has got 8 touchdowns. Corey Clement's got like 5 or 6 touchdowns. Who do you take away? Who do you take away in this offense? And, you know, Jay Ajayi, you know, has come in and been a big part of what they do. But, you know, but Blount, you know, is a big part as well. You know, Corey Clement, you know, is huge in third down situations. And, you know, they've got so many different weapons and they're so interchangeable, you know. Alshon Jeffries can get 11 targets 1 week, and then the next week you come back and Zach Ertz, who's the highest targeted, you know, receiver with tight end, you know, on the team. And then you got Trey Burton, you know, that came out and had 2 touchdowns, you know, 2 weeks ago. They have so many different weapons that they're not targeting any one guy. And when you have that many weapons as a defensive coordinator, it makes it very hard for you to defense them, because who do you take away? Because you can take away Zach Ertz. Well, you know what? You got Torrey Smith, you got Nelson Aguilar, you got Alshon Jeffries, and you got Trey Burton that can still hurt you in a passing game. So, I mean, I think it's their diversity and their ability to spread the ball around in this offense that creates, you know, problems for for defensive coordinators and defensive teams, because you just don't know who's going to beat you from week to week. It's a different guy every single week.
Wrapping it up with Seth Joyner, the great linebacker who played for the Eagles. And Seth, finally, you go through all those lists of players and how they make up this explosive team. We were saying the same thing about the Raiders last year. 12-4, Carr got hurt, broke the leg at the end, they're one and done in the playoffs, and then they upgraded in their minds in the offseason, and we were talking about a Super Bowl run before the Raiders left Oakland in a few years and came to Las Vegas. As an analyst now for Fox Sports 1, give me a big picture on the Raiders. The disappointment this year, they were in a real close game against the Cowboys where I thought the officials got in the way, Carr ended up fumbling it into the end zone, a game that they could have won and knocked Dallas out of the postseason. What are the Raiders playing for, and do you think the Raiders put up a fight on Monday night?
Well, I think they're playing for pride. I think, you know, some of those guys on that football team are playing for their jobs. You know, they're going to be evaluated over the next 2 weeks. The team is underachieved. I think, you know, their best wide receiver, you know, couldn't stay healthy this year and couldn't, you know, really couldn't find his mojo. You need Cooper's, you know, explosive ability down the field to be able to open things up, you know, for Michael Crabtree, who is basically, you know, a 50-50 guy. He's not a guy that's going to beat you with speed. He's not going to get great separation. And the problem is when you have that situation, you're basically throwing him 50-50 balls that he's got to outcompete, you know, the number two defensive cornerback for. You look at the tight end, you know, Jared's been a disappointment, you know, in my opinion. I think, you know, he's had some good years in the various places that he's been. But as I watch him, you know, he is a guy that can be very dynamic at the tight end position. When I look at him, you know, he's a shadow of, you know, what he once was. I think when you look at the offensive line, they haven't been able to stay healthy. And because they haven't been able to stay healthy, I don't think that Marshawn Lynch has really had the impact that he's, you know, that he's capable of having. And as much as you want to talk about this league being a quarterback-driven league, there's only two quarterbacks, in my opinion, that can thrive in the NFL without a running game. That's Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. The rest of those guys, including, Carr, they need a running game. If you don't give them a running game and you force these guys to have to throw the ball 40, 50 times a game, that plays, if I'm a defensive coordinator, that plays right into my hands. And then you move on the defensive side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, this team has just underachieved. And I find it, you know, I'm really awestruck about that with Jack Del Rio being a defensive-minded guy. They have just never been able to formulate the kind of talent over there necessary. I feel for Khalil Mack because he's a phenomenal player, and he's all that they have. You know, Urban can be a guy that's really that can be a compliment to him on the other side. But when you look at the two defensive tackles, they get nothing out of those guys. Those guys don't give a push. They're not very good against the run. I don't know, you know, what's going on with Navarro Bowman, whether, you know, his tank is empty or whether it's a schematic thing. They look really, really unsound from a defensive perspective, from gap control to containment to leverage to understanding what other players in the defense, you know, where their help is and, you know, where they fit and things like that. And it's just, you know, if it's disappointing, you know, for me, and I'm looking at it and I don't have anything invested in the Oakland Raiders, I got to think that it's got to be extremely disappointing, you know, for the Oakland Raider fans and that organization for them to be on the cusp of what everyone thought was a potential Super Bowl team to a team that's not going to make the playoffs and a team that just looks lost right now.
Again, appreciate Seth Joyner joining us. Check out his work as an analyst on Fox Sports 1. Now I want to get some more energy going, so I'm bringing in a friend. He's the number one sports talk radio host in all of Philadelphia, so I wanted to have not only someone's perspective from Philly, but a diehard fan and a great radio host. He's also the co-host with Lincoln Kennedy on Fox Sports Radio on the weekends. We welcome Anthony Gargano to the official Raiders podcast. All right, my friend, good to have you here. And the Eagles are in the running for home field advantage throughout the entire NFC. Who saw this coming?
Not me, my brother. I wish I did. I didn't see any of this, man. Especially Carson goes down, and it was like the Grinch stole the Super Bowl, JT. Except Nick Foles threw 4 touchdown passes, and there's a glimmer of hope in Philadelphia.
I know you weren't that optimistic when Foles took over, but since then he's playing well. Do you think Peterson manages the game for him or says, look, you've been in this league, you threw 7 touchdowns against the Raiders in the past, not just this game on Monday night. Do they give him the playbook so he can make plays, or do they get more conservative because that's just natural?
Well, it's funny, JT, you said that, because that's what you would think. You would think, and I've been calling for them to run the ball, even with Carson, that they needed to run the ball. They have Jay Ajayi, who they traded for at the deadline. They still have LeGarrette Blount. They got a kid, Corey Clement, from Wisconsin, rookie, who can all run the ball. So I'm like, run the rock, run the rock. But he didn't run the rock last week. He threw it. He kept the game plan the same. Ultimately, I think it could be to their demise, not against the Raiders, but he's not going to change the book. He's going to keep going. That's Doug Peterson. He does some things, man, and I scratch my head. Like, he'll go for it. You know, his own side of the 50. He'll go for 2. He'll go for 4th and 2.5 at the goal line. Stuff that I would not do. But it's all worked out for him. JT, my father used to say, guys like him have a horseshoe up his rear end.
Anthony Gargano joins us. What I think is interesting about this team, and they just keep coming back from injuries. They're tough. They're physical up front. They're nasty on that offensive line. They fly around sideline to sideline. And I just think their physicality is the key. Coming out of the NFC East, it was a good year for them because the Giants are down. The Redskins remain the Redskins here. But the Cowboys are still alive. They just won that game in Oakland. And don't get me going on the officiating, how terrible it was in that game. But did they feast this year? How much had to do with the fact that they feasted the Eagles on the NFC East?
Yeah, listen, I think they're good, and I think Wentz is great. I do think they're bloated. I think their defensive front is really, really talented. They're deep, and they could get after the quarterback. The only thing is, they did feast against teams like the Broncos with Simeon, the Bears with Trubisky, Arizona with no quarterback, San Francisco before Jimmy G. So they were really fortunate in that they played offenses that were either one-dimensional or just had no quarterback play whatsoever. And so I think they're a little bloated, but they're good. I mean, I think, you know, it wouldn't be a shock if they could somehow, you know, eke out 2 home games in January and get to Minneapolis. I think if you played the Rams now, I think it's a tough game because I don't know that you can actually score with the Rams. But look, it's the link. You got weather concerns. In January in Philly will be cold. So they got a puncher's chance.
Hey, to date ourselves, take me back to Super Bowl 15 in New Orleans, Raiders and the Eagles back in the day. There was a Donovan McNabb Super Bowl with T.O., but that was one of those great moments in Raider history where obviously the Eagles came in flying high out of the NFC. Great coach, great players on that team, and that team still gets a lot of love and credit in the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, well, Dick Vermeil was the coach, and so I was a little boy. I realized what it was like to be an Eagles fan, that they would be favored in the Super Bowl and lose, and not because they weren't as talented, but because Dick Vermeil had the guys locked up on Bourbon Street, and so they played tight. So while the Raiders were out partying, doing Raider kind of things, they came out and played loose and won the game because that's what the Raiders do. They go out and win the game, and they don't worry about curfews and stuff like that. But that was my entree as a little boy into being an Eagles fan as a kid. And, you know, look, it was that year, the Raiders came to Veteran Stadium, JT, and the Eagles beat the Raiders 10-7. And it shows you that in the Super Bowl, there were the Raiders just getting revenge.
No one talks to the Eagle fans the way you do. It's Monday night. You know Raider fans get tickets. The Raider fans travel well. And plus, that's a hub for East Coast Raider fans to get to a game. It's like that when they're at MetLife. It's like that when they're anywhere. You saw the crowd that showed up when the Raiders had a rough night in the nation's capital and lost that big game to the Redskins. So I don't think the Raider fans are bailing on this game because it's Monday Night Football. But I'm telling you, the amount of beer that's going to be, what are these Eagle fans going to do? It's Christmas. You walk me through how an Eagle fan on Christmas goes from Christmas opening presents with the family to Monday night football and how much alcohol is consumed around that.
Oh, it's going to be ugly in a great way. All right, so here's the thing. First of all, I do think they're the two best fan bases in all of football. Like, if it's a Game of Thrones, I want Eagle fans and Raider fans as my army going in to fight the North. You know what I'm saying? So I love those guys. It'll be the Sixers play at noon on Christmas Day against the Knicks. So, like, here's what I did in my household. I said, listen, you get your morning gifts to my 8 and 4-year-old, and then we watch Sixers-Knicks, and then we need to start preparing for the Eagles and Raiders, and everybody else, and maybe even Dad, will be nipping, if you don't know. Christmas holiday cheer in Philadelphia. It's going to be freezing. The high is going to be 28 degrees, JT. So, you know, guys, you can excuse guys for wanting to keep warm. You know, that's what my grandmother said. You take a little nip, it keeps you warm.
You have a great holiday. You have a great Christmas. Thanks for bringing the Eagles perspective for us, and I'll see you down the road. I love everything you do.
You too. You're the greatest, man. Love you, brother.
Love Anthony Gargano, as you can tell. I hope you enjoyed that. He's got great energy. One of the fellas there with Lincoln Kennedy on Fox Sports Radio, and a guy who's going to enjoy this ride as far as it goes with the Eagles. All right, let's move on to our next guest, a former Raiders and Eagles fullback, John Ritchie, left it all on the field for the Silver and Black, one of Raider fans' favorite players when he played for the Raiders from 1998 through 2002, played with the Eagles from 2003 to 2004. We welcome him to the official Raiders podcast. John, great to catch up with you again. Happy holidays. How are you?
Happy holidays, JT. It's great to be with you. It's been too long, man.
Great to talk to you again, and good timing with the Eagles right there in your backyard, a team you played for, and the Silver and Black. And I saw you and your family, and we get a chance to spend time with each other in Napa at training camp, and expectations were so high coming off 12 wins last year for the Raiders, and now they need a miracle to get into the playoffs. How does it look from your view, the Raiders this year taking a step back?
Yeah, it's sort of surprising, certainly. I don't exactly understand the issues. I feel as though, I don't even know who to say we about when I'm talking about these two teams. I almost said the we out there. I feel as though just the smallest margin of error existed this year, and the Raiders came up short. The last game was just such a microcosm for that. You know, we saw it with the, you know, fake first down. We saw it with the marginal calls that worked against Oakland. I feel for them. And they're a better team than their record shows, but they have been inconsistent. And if there's anything that the Eagles have not been this season, it's inconsistent. You know, when you compare these two teams, the Eagles, despite the fact that they lost the guy who could be the MVP of the league, they're rolling. And this is it's going to be a great game. I'm super excited for this thing, but the Raiders have a tall task in front of them.
John Ritchie joins us. John, you played on some great Raider teams, and especially, you know, when you come to the Raiders and you play from 98 to 2002, the games you played in 2000, 2001, 2002, I mean, take us back to that team, how you were adding on players, expecting to go to the Super Bowl in a number of those years, the run that you were on and getting there, and knowing that in the offseason the team was just trying to tweak it and get a little bit better. We were getting a feel that the Raiders, and I still do have that feeling that they're doing that. They got a lot of good talent, many Pro Bowlers on this team, that they can kind of tweak it this upcoming offseason and get back to the postseason again.
Well, you know, those teams, when Gruden's first 2 years, we were 8-8, and we felt like in Gru's second year, things were really coming together. You know, we went to Arrowhead and beat them, I think, to keep them out of the playoffs.
Right, absolutely.
In our final game. That was, I believe, the whole Y2K thing, too. I felt like the world was coming to an end, and we went down there, and we dominated them, and that sort of was a springboard. We definitely felt like we were the best team in the league for the next 3 years. And, you know, unfortunately, they broke Rich. The Ravens broke Rich in the AFC Championship game. So took our chance away in the 2000 season. I was devastated by that because I absolutely knew we were the best team going. The following year, we had the whole Tuck Rule fiasco. Once again, we knew we were the best team in the league and didn't have a chance to show it. And then the following year, we ended up having to play against Gru in the Super Bowl. So, man, circumstances were crazy, but we knew we were dominant. We knew we were complete. And this Raiders team is just so close. You know, I do think bringing Navarro Bowman in has changed things. I do think that, you know, John Pagano calling the defenses, I think that has changed things for the better, and it's something that they can build on, and to piece together a little better secondary, and they'll be in a great spot.
John Ritchie's our guest. I want to go back to those three seasons you mentioned, 2000, 2001, 2002. When you look at that in coaching, it makes a big difference. Jack Del Rio had to make a tough decision getting rid of Ken Norton Jr. You mentioned Pagano getting elevated. Todd Downing was elevated from quarterback coach to offensive coordinator, and it hasn't worked out with Derek Carr the way it did last year, but Carr and Downing are loyal to each other. I want you to go back to how important coaching was to you, John, as a young player who didn't need a lot of motivation. Knowing you back then, you were one of those guys that just wanted to be at practice, wanted to be around your teammates all the time, but tell us about the difference in coaching and how it got the best out of you.
Well, man, I do. I don't think I had any way of appreciating how great John Gruden was in terms of teaching the West Coast offense. I didn't have anything to compare it to, you know, and then I left and, you know, I ended up having another great coach in Andy Reid, but significantly less hands-on than Gru was. I mean, Gru was out there, you know, running quarterback with the scout team at times. Like, we had to, you know, put a leash on him to keep him from, you know, trying to get out there and win in practice. Like, personally, he wanted to be out there throwing it. He, just incredible energy. And that translated, that spread, that everyone felt it. And, you know, he was, you know, the legend has it, you know, he was in there at 3 a.m. and, you know, getting done at midnight. And, yeah, you had to step up your own preparation with a guy like that who was that committed. And then with a quarterback like Rich Gannon, who's, you know, going in there and taking off with all the billiard balls from the player lounge and holding a team meeting and saying, I just you know, absconded with all the Papa Shot basketballs and pool balls. If you have a problem with it, get in and watch film. You know, it's not time to be playing around. It's time to get an extra lift in. It's time to get some extra film studying in. It's time to get some extra treatment in. Everyone knew who the leaders were. We had a lot, and not just the coaching staff, but we had a lot of guys who've been there and done that, been around the block. You know, I was playing with guys who I played on Tecmo Bowl. You know, like, they were on Tecmo Bowl, the way old Nintendo game. You know, Bill Romanowski in there, you know, Trace Armstrong in there. We had leaders, and they were absolutely coaches on the field as well as in the locker room and in the meeting room.
John Ritchie, as we wrap it up, former Raiders and Eagles fullback. And, John, this Philadelphia team clearly another team you played for, as you mentioned, the consistency. Carson Wentz goes out. Nick Foles threw 7 touchdown passes the last time he played against the Raiders. The Raiders remember what he can do. But the big question for the Eagles, can Nick Foles win playoff games, get this team to the Super Bowl, and win the Super Bowl? I was there when Jeff Hostetler did it for the Giants, replacing Phil Sims. It's happened before where guys can step in. And I got to think the Eagles are pretty happy that he's had experience over the last number of years and played in some big games.
4 touchdowns. I mean, Nick Foles looks really good, really solid. There is hope in this town that he can lead this team where everyone sort of expected the Eagles would end up, and that's the Super Bowl. They have been that good. The problem is now the defense has been showing cracks the last 3 weeks on a 3-week road trip. They allowed almost 30 points a game. So right now, Nick Foles is not the focus of the ire of the Eagle fan. It's what's going on with our defense. Can we cover anybody? And so, I think Derek Carr, I think he's got a real opportunity to capitalize on a defense that has a lot of questions. They've lost confidence in the last 3 weeks. And I think this is going to end up being a really an interesting game.
Yeah.
The Eagles play much better at home, so that's going to be difficult for the Raiders' offense and the noise. But I think they have a legitimate chance to keep this thing closer than what people are predicting.
Well, John, great to catch up with you. Again, happy holidays. You're one of the few people that can walk the earth, respected by Raider Nation and those lunatic Eagle fans. That's pretty good. You can get a drink at any bar on the West Coast with the global Raider Nation and anywhere in Philadelphia. That's a good thing.
I've been very lucky, JT, and it's great talking to you again. And keep me in the loop anytime you want to talk.
Appreciate John Ritchie joining us. I get a chance to see him every year in Napa as he comes back with his wife and family as the Raiders invite all of their alumni back. And that's a great event in Napa every year, and John is always in attendance. Let's wrap it up the way we always do. We'll head right up to Alameda, the headquarters of the Silver and Black, to talk to the senior writer for the Raiders, Eddie Pascal. Eddie, let's start off. How has the organization and Jack Del Rio handled that crushing loss to Dallas last Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how else you can say it. That was a rough one, about as subjective as you can get. But I think Coach kind of said his piece on Monday. He said, look, I don't agree with it. I'm not going to agree with it. Whatever the league, their explanation for how and why that came to be, you know, I'm going to respectfully disagree with them. And, you know, I saw what I saw, but you know, at this point, there's 2 games left, and it does nobody any good to kind of dwell on what could have and should have been on Sunday night. And, you know, all eyes on the Philly now.
Take a look back, if you can, on the Derek Carr fumble. I think a lot of Raider fans have his back on that. He was making a football play to win the game. He could have went out of bounds at the 1-2-yard line. That would have had a fresh set of downs, a timeout, the ability to bring Marshawn Lynch on the field for a quick run and put the game away that way. But how could you get on the back of a guy, or how could anybody take shots at him considering he's playing, he's been nicked up all year, he dove for the pylon, and the ball came out? How did Carr handle that? And you've seen him at practice this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think Derek kind of, you know, he said his piece postgame. He said, look, I was trying to make a play. And I think that's kind of been the collective thought around the team, the organization, is, look, this is your franchise quarterback. You pay him to go win football games. And that's what he was trying to do. I mean, did he come up literally inches short on Sunday night? Yeah, but I mean, I think you'd much rather see a guy with that fire, that passion, that heart, that the guy who wants to have the ball in his hands on the final play and to go try to win the football game. And that's exactly what he did. I talked to Vidal Alexander after the game, and I said, look, you know, how do you kind of comfort Derek? How do you kind of tell him what he needs to hear after a play like that? And he goes, look, you know, he knows. I don't think anyone needs to say anything to him. He goes, we love him. He's our guy. So there's no one I'd rather have behind me than, you know, making a play than Derek Carr. He goes, he's our franchise quarterback. He's going to be our franchise quarterback. And, you know, it just came up a little bit short on Sunday. But, you know, I think to me, the one thing that was awesome to see from that whole play was Derek was fired up. You saw an impassioned Derek Carr trying to win the game. And, you know, that I think that with 2 games left and, you know, obviously 3 when that happened, but I think that was a really good thing to see for the you know, this team going forward.
I agree. I think it is, because Derek, this is a year that Derek will look back on, hopefully, years from now with a Super Bowl ring or an opportunity to be a multiple Pro Bowler and say, I remember that moment and I was better because of it. Wrapping it up with Eddie Pascal. Eddie, once a Raider, always a Raider, is the statement within that organization dating back with Al Davis. Now this team is playing for pride. They're playing on the national stage, Christmas, Monday Night Football with a global audience. And I'm expecting Jack Del Rio to have this team ready to go. I know the Wolves are at the door. The media has been really tough on this team all year long. And what do you expect to see from this team being around them this week?
You know, I expect them to go out and put their best foot forward. I mean, Coach was asked on Monday. He said, you know, with two games left and, you know, with the playoffs as a microscopic chance at this point, do you think about playing some of these young guys, kind of seeing what you have in some of your draft picks a little further down the roster? And he said, look, you know, our philosophy, our mindset doesn't change. We're going out and we're trying to win these games. You know, obviously the Silver and Black still have a chance to get to 8-8, get to 500. And I know that's certainly not where anyone expected them or wanted them to be. But, you know, there's still two games, two winnable games. And, you know, I think that Coach is going to do everything he can. He's going to put those best 11 guys out on the field. And, you know, come Monday night, I expect these guys to be fired up. I mean, like you said, this is a national game. This is a Christmas night game. This is people sitting around with their families watching a little football. And when they turn the TV on, it's going to be the Raiders. And I think that it's important for these guys to go out there and put their best foot forward and put on a good product. And that's fully what I expect them to go do against a very, very good, talented, rolling Philadelphia Eagles team.
No doubt about it, they're rolling. Eddie, great job as always. Safe travels to Philly. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks again to Eddie. I'll see Eddie next Sunday as the Raiders head to Carson to the StubHub Center. I'm looking forward to seeing that game. It'll depend on what the Chargers are playing for at that point, but you know how many Raider fans are going to be there? You know how many Raider fans have tickets or are going to try to get in to the stadium to see the Raiders play their last game of the year at the Los Angeles Chargers? I'll be there for that one. Can't wait to see the energy of the Raider Nation on the road. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, have a great holiday, everyone. We'll come back and wrap up the podcast next week and get you ready for the LA Chargers. Have a great holiday.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.